City. It's your man, Big Pat, the voice of your Charlotte Hornets, and you're listening to the All Hornets Podcast Network, presented by Sports Illustrated.
Welcome into the draft show on the All Hornets Podcast Network. One podcast covering the Charlotte Hornets with multiple different shows in multiple different ways. Joining me 1 week out from the NBA draft lottery is Chase Whitney. Chase, how's it going?
It's going very well. It's, you know, the heat of draft season right now. We got the G League Elite Camp, the Combine coming up here. Same weekend as the draft lottery. Very packed weekend for all the draft sickos out there, especially those who either cover or support a team with lottery implications, such as the Charlotte Hornets. Potential to have a very high pick for the second year in a row, third time in 4 years. So exciting times to be following the Charlotte Hornets from an NBA draft perspective. Where better place to go than inside the Hive? Got a great deep dive coming up for you today on a top prospect in this draft. Very well could be a Charlotte Hornet when it's all said and done, potentially. Zachary Risacher. James, I know you're a big Zachary Risacher fan yourself. Do you want to intro the fans here and kick this off?
I am, and I'm looking forward to talking Risacher. In part two, we're going to be revealing our big boards. We're going to do some big board wars. We're going to be revealing our top 30, and kind of we're going to be showing them on stream for those following along on YouTube. You'll be able to see, and we're going to be kind of debating some of the guys that we have high, we have low. This is the first time that I think either of us will have publicly shared our big board. Is that right? I know I've not shared mine before. Have you shared yours?
No, this is it. This is right now. This is the big reveal.
So, I mean, I always try not to share my big board too early because I'm someone like I get anchored to priors. So if I say like early on, I really like X player and people know, then I'll not want to move off them. So I've kind of changed that in recent years where I used to post like here and there in the kind of like January, February, March. And now I just wait until literally draft lottery week. And that's what I do. But before we start, should we do a quick sim? Should we do a quick tankathon sim? Because next time we speak, we'll know where the Charlotte Hornets are picking, Chase. We'll be doing a mock draft on our next episode straight after the draft lottery. There'll be a immediate kind of reaction pod with the buzzer beaters and Hornets and Heartbreak crew. They're going to be bringing you all your action straight after draft lottery night, but we're going to be recording 24 hours later doing our first mock draft. So let's hit a sim here. Hornets are with the third best odds. Tankathon is simming and Charlotte moved up to two. We'll take that. The Utah jumped up to the first pick, moved up seven places. Interesting. So Hornets move up to two in our official Tankathon sim. Good news to the Charlotte Hornets. Let's hope that brings positive vibes for next week. Right, on to more important things. And I've just realized, by the way, for those watching on YouTube, I've got the completely wrong overlay on. We didn't just use last week's overlay. I've just put the wrong one on. So let's put that on for Zachary Risacher. Alex Saar versus Nikola Topic was last week. So, Zachary Risacher, who is this international man of mystery who college basketball fans will not have seen or heard of? He plays for French team JL Borg. He has started the season this year. He's 19 years old. French national, plays for the French national team. Actually born in Spain, where his dad was a former professional basketball player. He played for the French national team. He played for the EuroLeague in the EuroLeague as well. So another son of a pro, which I always like in my draft prospects. You know he's going to be brought up around good coaching, a good approach. He is a 6'9". I think he's 6'10", 6'11". That's how he looks on film to me. But 6'9", 6'10", long, rangy wing. Not a kind of a dribbler, not a passer, but an extremely versatile defender. Really gets after it on that end, and an excellent outside shooter. We're shooting above 50% for more than half this season at France. They're still playing. Their season's still going right now. They're fighting for a playoff spot in the French league. But he's now just, I think, in the high 40s or the mid 40s after a second half of the year shooting slump. So for number places, ESPN, we should point out, has Zachary Risacher as the number one prospect in their mock draft right now. So we could be talking about someone who is a viable number one pick right now. Where we have him on our boards, we'll get into that in a little bit. But Chase, what part of Reza Shea's game do you want to start with kind of breaking down for our scout?
So I think that when you look at him as a prospect, if you're just watching highlights or if you're taking like an actual deep dive into the film, the first thing you're going to notice with him is his shooting. Whether you believe in it or not, you like it, you think he's a good shooter right now, or he will be eventually, that's probably the thing that most people are going to take a notice to first. So why don't we start there?
Let's start there. And look, the percentages will tell you he's a good shooter, right? You don't need to worry too much. I will say, like, before this season, he was not thought of to be a great shooter. He shot an okay for the French team in FIBA, the under-21s or the under-19s that he played for this summer. At the Hoop Summit last year, I believe I've spoken to various people who are at practices at the Hoop Summit and in the game itself, and he didn't shoot a great ball, kind of looked a little bit shy. But I will say that is not anything what you've seen this year. He is an extremely confident gunner. He really lets it go. He likes to shoot from the corners. And he is a super, super quick release. Flashes some really deep range. Even has some step backs and sidestep threes. And what I've really noticed, and this is something that not many prospects I've scouted with his size, I've seen do this at his age. He is like a no-dip three. So he'll catch the ball above his shoulders and just do like a Sam Hauser, just like fire it up there. And that is something that normally good shooters do not develop until like their mid-20s. And this kid is 19 and he's doing that. He is really good shot prep, quick footwork, no dip, kind of gets it off quickly, and he's got super size. So I didn't see this thing ever getting blocked. He even hits some like back pedal threes when he comes off stagger screens to make sure it gets behind the arc. His shooting, even though he didn't have a reputation coming into the year, I'm saying, Jace, I am all in on him being on a three-point threat. Just because of the gradient of difficulty that he takes and the fact that his coach is okay for him to do that at 19 shows that like he must have proven to his teammates and his coaches that like this is just what he does. This is how he should, these are the types of shots he should be taking. So for that reason, I am pretty sold on the shooting. I expect him to, that what to be is pretty much signature skill in the NBA is to be a guy who can not just shoot the three ball well, but get to it in a variety of ways.
And you mentioned at the end there that that wasn't really like the word on him coming into the season. And coming out of the FIBA. Right, exactly. Like coming out of the FIBA U19 tournament this past summer, it was like the playmaking flashes and like kind of ball handling going downhill was maybe the most intriguing thing about him. And in many cases, people had him in like the mid-20s or like as high as maybe the late lottery was like about as high as people were on him. He has rocketed up draft boards with the type of shooting display that he's put on this year. I will say, though, I'm confident in the shooting. But I'm probably still not as confident in it as you are. I'm just not sure that he's quite as good enough of an athlete to really leverage it in the way that he does in the French League. And there's a couple of reasons for that. But first of all, I don't think he has any sort of ability to shoot off of the dribble unless it's like a pump fake, sidestep, step back type of thing right now.
Yeah,
that is where that like, and that's where that like kind of like trips me up a little bit, because like that is a valuable skill. Like I totally agree. Like even if that never comes along, he could still be a very good shooter. But then if you draft him really anywhere inside the top 10, like I think then it becomes like a big risk on that type of stuff panning out. Like in the French League this year on dribble jumpers, he's shooting 36.8% on 38 attempts. That's A, not a super high volume, and B, like a pretty like average percentage, I would say, especially in,
and I think
like
a lot of those will be twos as well. I don't think there'll be many three attempts in there. A lot of them will be pull-up twos. Like he likes to use the glass for little pull-ups and sometimes like fade away or turn like around his right shoulder and shoot over people. So I don't think even many of those dribble jumpers will be beyond the arc.
Yeah, no, the significantly higher portion of them came from inside the arc. And shooting is that like he is a good three-point shooter, but in the way like that I think of like Brandon Miller. Like Brandon Miller is an all-encompassing good shooter. Like you put him in really any situation where he has to take a jump shot on a basketball court, whether that's like off the dribble, like going downhill, like a baseline leaner from like 15 feet, a free throw line pull up, a spot up three, a step back three, like he's good at all of those things. Reese Shea is primarily like a spot up threat. Like that is the best way that to use him right now. And if you're an NBA team, like drafting a guy who can really only hurt defenses off of the catch right now and doesn't have really the ability to take that and dribble, like take two or three dribbles inside the arc and score that way or create for his teammates really out of it either. That's just, it's a tough sell for me, but I do, he is a very good shooter. Like his length and shot versatility and the mobility that he shows on the perimeter. He obviously has great touch too. Like, he doesn't have like bad misses. He never like airballs it or shoots it long or bricks it off the corner of the backboard. Like they mostly just fall off the rim in some way or bounce around and come out when he misses, which is a very good sign to me. It shows that he can maintain his touch through pretty much any sort of like movement and any sort of like contest that the defense might give, which he's actually a pretty good shooter on guarded catch and shoots as well. He's like a 33% shooter on relatively high volume because obviously teams know he can shoot, so he doesn't get a ton of open ones. Most of his open shots come in transition or off of like a broken player, broken defensive play, I should say. But yeah, he is definitely like a good shooter in the traditional sense, but he's not as well-rounded, I would say, as I would like to see from somebody that's at like the tip top of the draft and is billed as like maybe one of the best shooters in the draft, which I mean, I don't know how many people are arguing that specifically in his case, but I think especially at the top, he would be considered one of those guys. And
I think for his size, like
he just has a lot. Yeah, right.
Yeah, like there'll be better shooters like Reed Shepard and, you know, but right. This guy is like legit 6'10", and he plays, if he's not, he plays that size and he has length. I want to say, again, we don't have official measurements. I think he's got super long arms. I would not be surprised if he's got like a 7'1" wingspan, something like that. So I think it's the combination of size and shooting, which I think is rare. But you are fair, right? He is not a guy who is going to, you know, if someone goes under on a pick and roll, he's going to like just pull it back and shoot it like maybe someone like Nikola Topic was, who we discussed last week. But I do like his range of counters. And even though like you could look at it and go, right, 40% of his shots were spot up threes. But like I'd say 10% of those for the normal player, you would not be able to take a spot up three. But because he has such a quick release, because he has such good footwork, he's able to like almost generate it into spot up threes. And I think that's a skill which is so subtle and nuanced that people probably aren't going to be able to counter for that as well. But I think for me, because I see him trying some of these like high difficulty gradient aspects of jump shooting that I talked about earlier, like these no dip threes, like super quick release, I just believe that he's going to get there. I think he's just beginning to tap into this like shooting side of him. So, look, definitely a good place to start because I think it's a huge strength. Let's go to another one of his strengths, his defense. I have to say, there is not many people I've seen at this age who have like the length like him who want to defend as much as him. I think I posted a clip the other week where he made like 4 efforts. He picked a guard up full court, which is basically how he's been used all year, is being put on point guards, hassling point guards. He picked a guy at full court. Someone set a screen. He ended up dropping back with the big, kind of tagged the big through the lane. He then rotated out to a shooter. And not only then, the ball got passed to the corner to like the next guy, and he rotated out again, contested the shot. It just multiple efforts, super smart, plays team basketball, exceedingly well team basketball, and uses length well. Like, often switches on to bigs, and I think does a really, really good job kind of like battling with them, contesting post entries, things like that. I've been very impressed with his defensive side. You know, uses his length well, contests everything at the rim, like has two-handed, goes straight up, really does well to kind of come off and act as that help weak side defender. Can side with guards, can block them from behind, really fluid mover over and off screens, getting around them. Just a defensive Swiss Army knife. Like I think like the way I project him is like Herb Jones style defense. Okay. Just versatile. You can put him on anyone. Like, probably has like a similar frame in some ways to Herb Jones, maybe a little bit bigger. But this is what you're talking about. And again, I agree with you. Normally, top five, you're talking about a defensive 3-and-D stud. I think he's a bit more than that. But yes, you kind of are in this draft because you don't have those like high usage Paolo Banchero types.
And that is a great point. Because you just see what he has in terms of his like steal and block production too. Like, he passes the eye test, very versatile. He's pretty mobile for his size, I think, is what makes up for like
agile. I would say
very agile. Yeah, he's very light on his feet. Like, flips his hips really quickly. He can get skinny like over screens much like easier and quicker than most other guys that are 6'10" or 6'9" can. And his like steal and block production in a pro league at his age is pretty impressive. Like, he is going to be one of the younger players at the top of this draft. Like, he's going to be, I think, 19 on draft day. There are a couple other 19-year-olds that are going to be 20, I think, before he turns 20. And then, obviously, guys like Donovan Klingon, Reed Shepard, Dalton Kinect are in their 20s already. So he has much more, theoretically, room to grow into his body and as a defender, just in terms of his experience level, than a lot of the guys around him here. And he still put up the third most stocks on his team. He had 76 in 31 games this year. He has the third most defensive rebounds. He has 143 in 31 games. And, like, he's not playing against in the best, you know, European league. And he plays in the EuroLeague, obviously. But on their domestic league in France isn't, like, you know, the best and the most talented or the most athletic. But as is the case with most of these leagues overseas, he's a 19-year-old playing against guys who have been grinding for the last 10 years to put food on their table for their families. In the case of the Americans or anybody that's not from France, you're from out of the country doing so. And he's not. He's a young French kid that's looking to go at the top of the NBA draft. And he is still producing in this way, in ways that are very difficult, or some of the most difficult ways to produce as a young player in a pro league. So that alone, I think, is a good sign on top of the good film that he's put out there.
And when I watch the film, I sometimes look and I'm like, why can't I find any plays where like teams are attacking Reza Shea? Like, and you look at it, he's a rookie, he's 19 years old. Okay, he was 18 when the season started, playing in France. He's playing against, you know, adult men who've been playing for 10, 15 years. 7% of his defensive possessions are isolations against him. I mean, that is just code for like teams never attack the guy. They are trying to stay far, far away from Zachary Risechet because he is a hugely impactful defender. And it's just really clear that he's always trying to move him around, get the ball away from him because he has such a massive impact on the game. And again, that's nothing that's going to ever show up really on a stat sheet. It's not going to be a steal or a block. But that's everything that you need to know for someone of that size. Now, look, he's very skinny. He lacks a lot of strength. Okay, he's going to get to the NBA. And there's definitely going to be some challenges. But we talk about Herb Jones. He was someone who was super skinny. We see guys like Jaden McDaniels in Minnesota, another like guy who you'd probably describe as lean and skinny. And I think there is something about these wings that those kind of light frames enable them to be that agile, versatile defender. They can use their length well, even when they do have that strength disadvantage. So there's definitely going to be moments where he struggles on the interior. But that's pretty much every 19-year-old coming out of any draft cycle.
And for what it's worth, he does play with a high motor, like you said earlier. He's at least somebody that is going to try and be physical, even if it's not going to work. Even now, like in the French League, it doesn't work very often. I believe he grades out pretty well as a post-up defender if you look on Synergy, but you know, the bad clips, the low lights are very low. Like, it's just him getting completely moved out of the way. He is lacks core strength in a very, very significant way right now. Like, he has no ability to like get a lower center of gravity and actually hold it, just because even if he does get positioning, whatever guy that he's guarding is most likely stronger than him and is going to be able to just dislodge him from whatever position that he gained. But he is a very smart defender. He does have the length and size and athleticism. So if he can just get stronger, like, he will be a good defender, probably at the very least in the NBA. And if he does get stronger and maintains all of that athleticism and instincts and all that stuff translates from the French league to the NBA, like, he's going to be a very strong defensive asset on the wing with the ability to like switch up and down a little bit too, which really adds to like a layer of versatility to his game.
I mean, you talked about the motor, and it, like, as well as that, and it's related, he plays with like a passion and fire, which he wears his heart on his sleeve. Like, when he has big plays, you can see it. When he messes up, you can see he's so frustrated and angry at himself. And he's so into the game. He's so into the moment. And I feel like he takes every single play personally, and he really digs into it. And that pops through the film. Like, I've heard him interviewed, comes across a pretty quiet, shy kid. Like, not a great natural English speaker, like some of the people. But this is a guy who came up through the ASVEL Academy in France, which is, for those who might remember that name, is the team where Tony Parker came out of, and also where a certain Victor Wembanyama came out of, right? So that they breed them well out of ASVEL, out of that academy, and he's done very well there. We talked about some of the weaknesses there in terms of the defense, in terms of the strength. You talked about some of the pull-up, you know, off the dribble shooting. Do you have any other kind of big concerns with Reece Shea when you look at him as a kind of a top of the draft prospect?
Yeah, the ability to create off the bounce is definitely worrying for me. Like, I fully support the idea of taking him in the top 10, or especially if he falls out of the top 10. Like, at that point, that's a great value play. I just don't know if he could be somebody that could really break in and solidify himself as like a top 3 to 5 guy for me. You just need, at least you need the upside of being able to be somebody that's going to create off the dribble. I just think right now he doesn't have a great handle. It's just like, okay, very standard and like compact, tight to his body. He doesn't really have like any wiggle at all, despite like you may think that he would, because he's so mobile on the perimeter defensively, and without the ball in his hands, it doesn't really translate as a ball handler, which is like one of the hardest things in basketball, is to like be athletic with the ball in your hands in the same way that you are without it. But that's kind of what puts you at the top of the draft. Like just for example, like that's why I have Rob Dillingham above him, because Rob Dillingham is the same athlete with the ball as he is without the ball. He is also a very good shooter. He certainly has significant deficiencies, as I see you put your head in your hands right there. He has his deficiencies, but what those deficiencies do, if you, the rest of your game pans out, I think is not nearly as significant as it is with somebody like Reece Shea, who probably has a lower ceiling overall. And like, if he doesn't improve in certain areas, like, sorry, I had to cough there for a second, but if he doesn't improve in certain areas, like, I also think he's a bit streaky of a shooter as well. So that kind of needs to iron itself out. And then he also would need to add something off the bounce. Like, how many guys that are just pure spot up threats? Like, I kind of liken him to like a bigger version of like Max Strus, obviously a way better defender, but offensively very similar role. You would never draft Max Strus with better defense, like even if it's a lot better defense, inside the top 5, just because of the role that you're going to be able to put them in. Like, you're never really going to be able to maximize like what you get out of that slot. And ideally in the top 5, you're drafting somebody that could at least be like a top 3 option on your team. And I just feel like Reece Shea, like, while he does have like a pretty high floor, like maybe the highest floor of anybody in the top of this draft, especially for a wing, I don't know if that quite justifies like a relatively lower ceiling compared to other guys. That's not even like a concern about him as an individual, though. It's more like just him in the context of this draft. Because if he was in another draft, he would go 14th and I'd be totally fine with it, you know?
So you said Max Strus. I'll throw back at you Desmond Bane, Mikal Bridges. That's what I see. And that's why I will have him higher ranked, okay? In terms of like elite defender, a guy who's probably going to be known for running around, catching the ball, screens. Like, can't do much if you just like isolate, but they leverage their off-ball threat to then get downhill and kind of make the right play. Rob Dillingham and Zachary Reece Shea, I think, are really two interesting contrasts. And you're right, he doesn't have much wiggle off the dribble. But I think this is almost a cultural thing between US-style AAU basketball, which is the Rob Dillingham absolutely. Show, versus Zachary Reece Shea, who's grown up in the academy, where you run the plays, you make the right play, you don't isolate, do, you know, through the legs 3 times and take a step back jumper. You don't hold the ball for more than 2 seconds because you pass it, you move it on, and you cut, and you, that's what you do. And I think we're at an inflection point where we are seeing that have a bigger precedence and having more success in the NBA than the other side. So I think I agree. You look at the highlight videos, you are going to be blown away by Rob Dillingham. But this is an undersized combo guard against a 6'10 wing who plays both ends of the floor. I just think it's a cultural thing that we're kind of like, some people are still struggling to see the differences between those two side of things. That said, the passing is horrific. Like, I'm a Zakari Risache fan, and like, he has these drives where he just has these blinders on and he just attacks the rim. And there are guys all, I think I clipped one out the other day. There was three guys condensed on him at the rim, and there was like two people open in the corner, and he could have just made a simple pass out. He just did not see him and tried to basically finish through three guys. Absolute blinders. It is not something that I think he will ever be able to be a good passer of the basketball. Okay, he is going to be someone who will make simple, basic reads, and that would actually be progress. You talked about FIBA, how he's shown some of that. So maybe there's hopefully the chance that he can display that a little bit. But that's something that I've really have struggled with a little bit on that side of the tape. The passing combined with the handle, he can't do anything off balance. He has to kind of be very well thought out in what he's going to do. He needs to get to his spots, which he does do well. Like, he gets to his pull up. He does try and avoid contact and drive. Sometimes likes to kind of stop and shoot over smaller players, which he'll be able to do in the NBA too, because he's absolutely huge. But yeah, sometimes gets sped up a little bit if people playing up on him. I think I've seen the knock on him being like a poor athlete. And I have to say, I just don't really see that. I think he lacks, like, maybe in the half court, but he's had some really explosive dunks. He's had some reverses. He's had quite a few missed dunks this year, which I love that he's going for them. I said to you beforehand, he's going to get a tech in the NBA from hanging on the rim, because when he gets going downhill, he like proper like pulls himself up and throws it on the rim. So you can clip that when he gets his first tech in the NBA, because that's definitely going to happen. But it is more of a transition kind of threat. Like, that's something where I probably do like him, is in transition. He cuts really well. He actually has like some really impressive drop steps and drives and giant Euro steps in transition, where he can kind of almost, I don't want to use the player I was going to use. Fuck it. Let's say almost Giannis-esque.
Oh, here we go.
With how he takes two steps from the three-point line and then gets to the rim. And he had a couple of plays like where he's in transition, takes like two Euros, he starts it, and then he's like at the rim. He's not anything like Giannis. But just in terms of, if I couldn't think of anyone else to liken him to those big Euro steps. But just like understanding of Euros and how to create a shot, it just makes me think there's more there in the half court to come when that game slows down for him a little bit more.
I think that where that comes from, like, the he's not a great athlete, is he's not like a, he's like a functional basketball athlete, but he's not really explosive in any traditional term. Like, he does have some vertical pop to him, but mostly in transition. And he's not like, he doesn't have a first step really at all. Like, he's not like dusting guys off the dribble. And like, that I think is what stands out mostly to people that don't like follow the draft like we do and do deep dives on these guys on film. Like, you don't see that he moves really well and is very light on his feet in traffic and can get really skinny over screens and is just generally good, like, without the ball in his hands. Like I said earlier, when he does have the ball in his hands, oh, it is good. It's absolutely good. But it's like what you see the most is like where he has the most athletic shortcomings, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. And like, that's not necessarily like fair to him, but it is going to give him the perception that he's not like a great athlete overall. But I think he's a good athlete in basketball terms. Like, he's very mobile. He's thin, but he's long. Like, he's fluid with his feet. Like, that's really all like a player like him needs to be able to do. Like, he doesn't need to be blowing by people and then rising up to dunk over bigs, like, for his style of play. Like, that's not really something he needs to add. Like, he just kind of needs to refine what he's already good at and build
2 points
upon that.
2 points.
Right, like, exactly. Like,
it doesn't matter how it looks as long as it goes in.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would rather have a player who knows he isn't an on-ball player and plays to his strengths and does things for the team, rather than someone who, a little bit like Miles Bridges we saw this year, like trying to do stuff on the ball when it's like, that's just not you, man. Like, it's not going to work this way. This isn't winning basketball with you being high usage. And he knows exactly who that is. And that's something that Steve Clifford talked this year about Brandon Miller, how much he loved that he could play without the ball. And I don't think there's any on-ball players in this draft who should have the ball ahead of LaMelo Ball or Brandon Miller. I don't think there's a single one. So you are drafting complementary players to fit around that. And that brings us into our fit with the Charlotte Hornets, the last part of our analysis here. Chase, what do you think of the fit of Zachary Risacher with the Charlotte Hornets? You mentioned you have him probably like towards 10 in that area of your board. If you were to make a Charlotte Hornets only board, would he move up for you because of that fit?
100%. I actually think of any of the teams really in the entire lottery, like the Hornets might be one of the better teams for him to go to because A, yep, he slots in at the three, which I think is his natural position, like right away. Like you may, if he lands in a certain spot, he may end up having to play the four a lot when I think that is really going to magnify like just how thin he is right now and how much he struggles with physicality, especially at the highest level. Like if you put him at the three, that's negated at least a little bit. He can use that speed and the open court and the agility that he has and just the overall like length and instincts and high motor and ability to create plays on defense, get rebounds and stuff like that. It's going to be much more valuable in his position at the three than it would be at the four. I think he's going to give up a lot more there. So that's right off the bat, like LaMelo, Brandon Miller, Risacher, like that is a very long, like mobile, yep, agile lineup on the perimeter. And if he ends up being the shooter that he has shown that he can be at times in the French league, that is a very, very good shooting lineup as well. So if you have like active, lengthy defenders and then really good high volume perimeter shooters at your 1, 2, and 3, you make it so much easier to build like a bench unit and a front court around that. So like, I think this would be a fantastic landing spot for him. And if, yep, the Hornets like maybe fall a little bit or the draft just doesn't fall their way with the players taken before them, like this is a very good match, I think, for team and player here. What about you, James?
And I think it's a fantastic fit. I agree with you. I think it's probably one of the best fits for any player. Maybe like Detroit is probably a good fit for Risacher as well, because like, mm-hmm, Cade's the number one. Right. You know, he can be the defender, 3-point spacer there. But I think those are the best two. We talked defensively. We've always said LaMelo Ball can't be the point of attack defender. Brandon Miller did it at times last year. I think he started the season well. I think as his offensive usage went up, that side of the ball for me dropped in the quality. I don't think he's someone you probably want in your primary like ball handler, point of attack defender every single time, especially not with the offensive load I expect him to carry. Risacher solves that problem. He allows you to play big because, like you say, Brandon Miller, Melo Ball, because he can guard point guards. He's shown that. So you play him at the three, you can place him on the point guards, then you can put Brandon Miller on maybe one of the bigger wings and LaMelo Ball on whoever is the kind of the worst offender, either at the two or the four. It's a really a seamless fit. And this team needs defense, it needs shooting, and those are two things that he adds. I think you have the playmaking that you need in that for a good offense with LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller. And it gives you, again, like an off-ball, off-screen threat. And we've seen some success. The best offenses, the Denver Nuggets, the Warriors in their peak, they get good offense by running a lot of kind of off-ball action, okay? Getting people coming off stagger screens, getting people coming off split cuts. Even the Kings have used that a lot and able to kind of like move the ball, leveraging outside shooting. And with Brandon Miller and Risacher, you have two threats who can do that off the catch. Even like, so you've got Seth Curry, you can even count into that group as well. So I think this is one of the probably the single cleanest fit. I'd say even better than Saar, just because, like we say, if he's playing power forward, you've got a non-shooter at the five with Mark Williams. I think this is the cleanest fit that we've discussed so far out of Topic, Saar. So I expect Risacher to be getting a very, very close look. Although I will say, like, I just don't think he's... You talked about going later in the draft, I don't think Risacher is going to get out of the top three, personally, because, I mean, I've taken part in some kind of community mock drafts this year already, and it's only when you start doing these mock drafts that you start going, where's this guard going to go? Well, they've already got two guards there. They're going to give playing time. There just aren't enough wings, Chase. Like, people kind of, like, they remember, but then they also forget that wings who can defend and shoot, who are 6'10", just don't grow on trees. And I think for that reason, I didn't see him getting outside of the top three, especially if he continues to play and play well, because he's kind of come back on a little bit after a cold stretch.
That's a great point. Him being a wing and filling the archetype that is arguably like the most valuable in the NBA, especially for a role player, just a guy that's 6'9", can move his feet, can shoot, can defend, and is a smart player on both ends of the court. Like, that is something that every single team needs, and you need more than one of those players in your rotation, really. So, and for this draft, it's long been established that there aren't going to be that many stars, most likely. So there's definitely something to be said for taking players that, especially in a Hornets context, that you know are going to fit well with the roster that you already have and will also fit on a roster however you choose to build it going forward, which there aren't that many players, especially at the top of this draft, that you can say that about. Reese Shea is one of them. Uh-oh. Did I lose you, James? Oh, we're frozen.
Back.
Oh, there we go.
We're back.
All right.
Sorry, I think my internet dropped out there, so I don't know what happened there. Apologies, viewers and listeners.
All right.
You were saying, sorry.
Oh, no, I finished my point about Reese Shea, so however you want to transition, take it away.
Well, I think that's probably everything in Zakaria Reese Shea. We've already gone 35 minutes in Zakaria Reese Shea, so a very interesting player to monitor here in the draft going forward. I'm sure it won't be the last time that we talk about Reese Shea here as we move forward the draft cycle. So thank you for those listening. And we will now move into part two, where we're going to reveal for the first time our top 30 big boards. And we're going to do some big board wars where we debate and we discuss and we try and point out what is the other one thinking. Coming next in part two. Welcome to part two of the draft show. Big board wars are upon us. And those watching on YouTube, you can follow along. We've got our rankings on the screen at the minute. We're going to go through these five at a time, so listeners can try and stay with us here of who we are listing and who we have ranked. So I'm going to reveal my top five first, and then I'm going to hand it over to Chase to do his. And then we're going to pick one player who we feel we're probably the furthest away from with a consensus here. So I have my one overall player, Nikola Topic. Number two, I have, as of this week, in build-up for this podcast, I revisit the film, Zakari Risache, overtaking Alex Saar, who is ranked three, Donovan Kling in number four, and Stefan Castle, the national champion, at number five. Chase, over to you to reveal your top five.
My top five begins Alex Saar, number one, Nikola Topic, number two, back-to-back Ignite prospects with Matas Buzelis and Ron Hall in the second at three and four, and then I got Cody Williams, younger brother of Jalen Williams, rounding out the top five.
Okay, so interesting already. We have three different names in our top five, and we don't have a single player ranked in the same level there. So already we talked about there's going to be a lot of lack of consensus in this draft, and we're seeing it already. Chase, I'm going to start. I want to talk about Cody Williams. I have him ranked 12th. You have him ranked 5th, which is quite a jump. Maybe in this draft, it's not like anything for me which is out of this world. I can see the theory, but this is the reason I have Cody Williams 12th. He's just a project, and he's a lot of in theory at the minute. If his brother wasn't OKC Jalen Williams, I genuinely think he would have lower draft stock. I think a couple of things. One, people are seeing the development curve Jalen Williams went on. I think two, they see the body that Jalen Williams has. He's like a powerful four, and Cody Williams right now is like a skinny 6'9". Very kind of like, he's again like 6'9 wing, but he's ultra skinny. And I don't think he has anything like the frame that Jalen has or will have. So for me, like I like him. He's a defensive wing. He has shown some playmaking shooting skills, but it's all like the 3-point shot's really low volume. The playmaking's low volume. He came off the bench for his team this year for Colorado. I just feel like he's 2 years away. And for me, that like is a project I'd rather take later in the lottery than at 5 overall.
You know, I can't really argue or say I fully disagree with a lot of what you said, because he is a project, right? Like, he is going to be one of the younger players in the draft here at the top anyway. He has been, he's maybe the most inexperienced, I think, is probably the best way to put it too. He had played the least in college. He missed about a month with an injury in the middle of the season as well.
Played with a mask on as well, which could affect, right. Like, that's after he came back from the injury. Can sometimes affect shooting, can't it, playing with that mask?
Right, and he's playing in the Pac-12 with Colorado, which obviously is still a very high level of competition, but is not quite, you know, SEC, Big 12, ACC level on a nightly basis anyway in terms of the pro prospects that you go up against. So he's very, like, his film is just very raw in all aspects. Like you said,
what makes him top five? What makes him jump for you? That there must be something here that you see a super high upside for potential wise.
Exactly. Like I said, he's the project, but with that project, like, I think you could really reap the rewards here in maybe 2 or 3 years once he actually settles in as an NBA player. Because like what you said about his frame, like, I actually think that like he does have a chance to fill out. Like, he looks like a guy that he has like broader shoulders. He is like long and lean as well, but I think that's just by virtue of being like 6'9 and skinny. Like, how many skinny 6'9 guys also, you know, look strong and built? Like, it's just a difficult thing to do at that age with that body type. So I think in a couple of years, you get him in an NBA strength and conditioning program. I wouldn't be surprised if he has, like, you know, the leap that Jalen Williams took to keep the brother comparison going as a sophomore. I wouldn't be surprised if Cody has something similar this year, either like playing sparingly in the NBA, mostly in the G League, or whatever he chooses to do, or whatever his team chooses to do in terms of his development plan. I wouldn't be surprised if he takes like a pretty big leap, like physically, which then allows him to take advantage of the skill that he has. Like, I feel like a lot of people have kind of written him off as like a creator of any sort, which he hasn't had very many flashes of it at Colorado. And he's obviously, I think he was a negative assist to turnover ratio player there too. But to me, like, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, he wasn't shy to try to do things. A, he started the year pretty well, and then he got hurt. And then as he was coming back, he was kind of integrating himself into a team that had Tristan Da Silva and KJ Simpson, two like older players, and Eddie Lampkin also, that are like older, well-established guys that have like roles that they needed to play for that team to be good. So that's not really an easy situation to jump back into as an NBA draft prospect as well. But he basically, he checks every box in terms of like low volume efficiency. He is a pretty good weak side shot blocker as well. His block percentage is like 2.4, I believe, this year, despite being like a pretty skinny dude.
Yeah,
I feel like he has so many physical tools to take advantage of, and has flashed in really key areas for a wing. Obviously, the shooting is the main thing, but I really think he's going to be able to take advantage of some guys off the bounce too. I think his athleticism pretty underrated now. Since he seems to be like falling, I guess, in the consensus. But yeah, I mean, I just pure upside play, like no doubt about it. There are going to be five players better than Cody Williams as a rookie, but this is, I think, the long term, he has a much higher ceiling than mostly anybody that's not in my top two.
Yeah. I don't understand how you can have like Zachary Risacher four spots lower than Cody Williams, because for me, like, it's a better shooting Cody Williams. And for, yeah, just before we move on to next, for me, just the biggest thing is his team didn't want him to have the ball in his hands. He was coming off the bench in a very low usage role. He was a good defender. That was like the best part of this game that popped to me in film. But like, I don't believe anything of the offense. I've no, it's a mystery box, like, for me. And the fact that you don't see it is a concern. Okay, let's move on to the back half of our top 10. For me, at number 6, coming in with some flames on it, Kyle Filipowski of Duke. Number 7, Matas Buzelis. Number 8, Reed Shepard. Number 9, Isaiah Collier. Number 10, Jacoby Walter. Chase, over to you for the rest of your top 10.
My number six probably going to get a very similar reaction to mine. My reaction to what your number six was is Rob Dillingham. Number seven, Stephon Castle. Number eight, Donovan Klingon, going back to back with the UConn guys here, just like I did with the Ignite prospects. Number nine, Zachary Risacher, who we've just spoken about at length. And number 10 is Reed Shepard, round out my top 10 here.
Okay. Chase, I'll let you go. Where do you want to start on this next group of players?
I think this is probably going to be the player that we have the largest discrepancy on in terms of like where we have them placed on our big board. I am not a believer in Kyle Filipowski at all. I wasn't last year either. And this year I have him a little higher than I would have at this point last year. As I do now, I have Kyle Filipowski 21. You have him number six. Yes, I'll let you have the floor and do the, you can be the good cop and I'll be the bad cop for Kyle Filipowski here.
I mean, so I was trying to think of comps, like what is his role? And this is what I came up with. I have three players, shades of, I think shades of Sabonis, shades of Kelly Olynyk, shades of Wendell Carter Jr. Okay. Look, I did again, I referenced this community mock already. And every single person in the community mock put Kyle Filipowski to the OKC Thunder at like 12 or 13 or wherever they're picking. Because they were like, well, they want guys who have size, who have basketball IQ, and can dribble, shoot, pass, and defend. And he does all those, and they gave him to OKC. Why do we keep letting the Oklahoma City Thunder drafting these guys? This is why I have him six. There's not really anything I don't think Filipowski can't do. Okay, he's not a fantastic finisher, but he's a skilled finisher with footwork, with touch, with craft. He was the anchor. He played the five this year, the anchor for a really good Duke defense. That was not something like you take for granted, especially with white seven-footers. We know that's something that will be assumed as they're not a good defender. Filipowski is probably quite hateable. I get that. For a lot of Tar Heel hands, I'm sure he is. But he's tough. He is a battling guy. This is like a guy who has like a Chet Holmgren battle in terms of like he looks like he's someone you can bully, but actually he's not. And I just think his passing out of the dribble handoff situations, his IQ, that's where I see the Sabonis rather than like the rebounding and the interior force, but more through like being able to use him in these dribble handoff settings. You know, some of the passes that he flashed this year at Duke, mostly at the post, but I'm pretty sure they'll translate to a more NBA-friendly system and kind of DHO situations. I just think he can be a guy who, you know, you can run a DHO with him. He's got a threat of passing, but then also he can quickly rip through, put the ball on the floor and drive to the rim. And he can do it with fluidity and finish. So I'm a big believer in Kyle Filipowski. Like I say, like Wendell Carter, Sabonis, Kelly Olynyk hybrids, somewhere between the player of maybe Kelly Olynyk and Sabonis, something of that nature.
Yeah, I definitely lean more towards Kelly Olynyk than Sabonis. I will put it that way.
Kelly Olynyk will be 21 in your board. I feel like he's a
see that's
okay
the thing is,
player in this year's draft.
I don't even think he's quite that good. Like Kelly Olynyk to me, and this is just like right off the bat because I have this in my notes. I feel like I've prepared myself for this discussion.
You knew this was coming. It's safe to say you knew Kyle Filipowski was coming. It's okay.
So the only indicator I think that Kyle Filipowski has that he's going to be a like stretch big is that he shoots a lot of threes. And granted, that is like a very strong indicator a lot of times. Some would say it's the strongest indicator.
I tagged you in space today.
There's a tweet going around today. It's that says 3-point rate is probably the strongest indicator for future 3-point percentage in the NBA. But the only problem is that, like, I feel like you still have to shoot a decent percentage on them. Like, it's not 3-point rate with the implication that you're going to shoot 29%. You know, if you're taking a lot of threes and you shoot a terrible percentage, that's a tough thing to come back from, both like mechanically and statistically. Like, there's so many things that you're going to set yourself behind there. But just in one quick look here, Kelly Olynyk was a 78% free throw shooter his last year in college. Kyle Filipowski, 67%. Kyle Filipowski is a career 53% shooter on the inside of the arc. Kelly Olynyk was a 63% shooter on the inside of the arc. Their 3-point percentage is pretty similar, but I just feel like to be like a true stretch big, And also, I think Kelly Olynyk is also, I think, more athletic. I mean, at the time, obviously not currently, he is more athletic than Kyle Filipowski. But coming out of college, I think he was a more appealing athlete as a big than Kyle Filipowski.
But a lot smaller and doesn't have the same length as Filipowski. He had T-Rex arms. He had T-Rex arms, Kelly Olynyk, from memory. I think he had a 6'9", 6'10 wingspan, I want to say.
May be true, but I think Kyle Filipowski's wingspan is, it might be negative, but if not, it's very, very close to...
Just on the shooting, while you look this up. I don't think Filipowski has to be a good shooter to be an NBA player. Like, for me, it's not like, well, if he shoots it, he can play. Like, you look at Sabonis, the impact that he has just through his basketball IQ, being able to use him as a facilitator. That's where I really see the offensive value for Filipowski, is him being able to pass the ball, to be able to put it on the deck, to drive and kick at basically 7 foot. And that's where I see the value. If he can shoot it, that's a bonus. I think the form actually looks okay. I agree, like, the indicators aren't great with his percentages, with his free throw shooting, you know, it's not really improved. I concede all of that. I'm not saying that he's going to be an Olynyk shooter. But, like, Wendell Carter is an occasional kind of, like, three-point shooter. I think that is a more likely outcome for Filipowski.
Yeah. I see. I just don't know if he is a good playmaker from anything other than a standstill either. I have not been convinced that he can really do anything.
I'll send you some passes.
I definitely need to.
He had three-point guards on his team. He had three-point, you know, he's not someone who often had to, like, he had Proctor, he had McCain, and then he had Jeremy Roach, right? So he had three-point guards on his team, all wanted the ball. His role was kind of to play, like, as the big anchor, to be a post presence, to basically draw guys and then pass it out to shooters. I think there's more in there that we got to see this year.
Yeah, I see.
It's fine. We don't have to agree.
And this is definitely something that I just don't, like, a high bigs.
You can miss out on the next Alperen Şengün again, Chase. It's fine. I'll be there honestly, taking my victory laps in a few years, and I'll be there telling I told you so. You could come on the boat with me to Şengün Island version 2 with Filipowski, but it's okay.
Ooh. Yeah. I think the problem is that bigs whose feel for the game is their best trait is probably one of my least favorite types of prospects.
Yeah, that Jokic guy, like, he's terrible.
No, see, I completely agree with that. But that's the thing, is Jokic is, like, the best passer in the world. Like, how many bigs offensive?
I'm
I know you meant that facetiously, but, like, how many bigs are, like, legitimate playmaking weapons that aren't, like, Jokic or Sabonis, like, genuinely the best passers at their position, probably. Like
Draymond,
I don't know, like,
another one.
Yeah, but Draymond is
Şengün.
Like
Şengün, there's another one.
Şengün would count, but I don't know. Like, Şengün also, though, like, he might be, honestly, he might be a better passer than Sabonis if you want to factor in the fact that Sabonis is mostly stationary doing handoffs and gets some, I mean, now we're 52 minutes into the podcast, he gets some total bullshit assists off of those handoffs that he is not creating anything at all. But either way, like, I just don't see Filipowski being even close to as good as either of those guys are. I think he would, like, Kelly Olynyk playmaking, like, style and caliber is probably, like, his peak. And I also think he's going to be a much worse shooter. Probably not as good. He might probably as good of a rebounder, but he does have a negative wingspan, by the way. He is 7 foot with a 6'10 wingspan. So he does not have length or athleticism really in his favor. He's, like, I guess mobile for his size, but not a switchable big either. Like, he just has a really
I actually think he's okay on the switch. I think he's okay on the switch.
All right. I guess we just got to disagree with that one then.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to our next group here. We're moving on to the from 11 to 20 players, which is up on the screen now. Chase, I'll let you go first this time. Who are your five players ranked from 11 to 15?
My number 11 is the third most popular G League Ignite prospect, Tyler Smith. Number 12, Providence's Devin Carter, the Big East Player of the Year. Number 13 is Dalton Connect. And then number 14, Isaiah Collier. And number 15, Jacoby Walter.
Okay. And 11 for me, I have Ron Holland. 12, I have Cody Williams. 13, I also have Dalton Connect, our first snap of our rankings so far. 14, Jared McCain, and 15, Rob Dillingham, I think 10 spots below you. So again, you're beginning to see some of these names here that we are, both of us are higher on and lower on, starting to come up a little bit. We talked a little bit beforehand. Do you want to talk about Jacoby Walter, Isaiah Collier, or Tyler Smith? I think they're the names that stick out for kind of comparing our three boards here on this ranking.
You want to go with Tyler Smith? I want to hear the case against him first, because he's honestly someone, yep, I haven't really talked about with anybody at all this class. So I'm curious to just hear what the downside is on him right now, because I've only been talking myself into him for the last couple of months now, really.
Yeah. I think he is a backup five. And that's basically where my argument stops. Yeah. I rank 20, which isn't like super low. It's probably around consensus. He's like maybe like 20 to 30 is probably his range. So I think you're higher than most. He is a stretch five who I think will be a good shooter. Like I put a lot of kind of trust in the form. He rebounds it pretty well. He has pretty good hands. Is an okay athlete, has decent size. I don't think he's a difference maker defensively as a five. So I think he'll be someone who'll be able to stretch the floor and rebound a little bit. I don't think he can really play make. I don't think he'll be able to score anything other than kind of popping out to the three-point arc. So I just view him as a role player. I don't really see the high upside. So that's why I have him probably, 10 spots essentially lower than you. Do you see more than what I've described there? Or do you just value that archetype of player more than that?
I do value that archetype of player pretty significantly, like shooting stretch big that has relative athleticism, at least for their position. I actually do think that like his defensive film is like mostly bad right now, but a lot of it I think is just technicality. He does handle physicality really well in the G League. So I feel like he does have a little bit more upside maybe, I think, than what you maybe think that he does have. But I mean, I also don't necessarily disagree with the fact that he might just be a backup five. The only problem is that in this class, like backups probably does start around this range, like at least in, you know, a medium outcome for projection, pretty much everybody drafted between 11 and 20 is probably going to be a backup in a weaker class like this. So I just feel like you would definitely take a shot on a guy who can play like a pretty specific role that is much harder for players to fill and like maybe adapt to. Like if you're a big that can't shoot, you're a big that can't shoot. And if you can shoot, you have just like a whole different world of possibilities and like lineup configurations that you can fit in or at least be effective in when you are on the court, because you don't need so much to be catered to you in the way that like we watch Nick Richards, for example. Like Nick just gets every opportunity like spoon fed to him because he can't shoot, he can't ball handle, he can't pass. Tyler Smith at least is, I think he's not a great ball handler, but I think he could put it on the deck a little bit, especially when it's like creating a shot. And I think he will have a face-up game eventually if he doesn't have one coming into the league now and get to play like a little bit of a different style than you do in the G League, because that's not really a thing like at all, like low post possessions. But that's something him and Matas Buzelis actually, I think, will be better at once they're in a different role.
I think you value the specialism of the shooting as a center. Yes. Like, whereas I value more the versatility of someone like Filipowski. So it's interesting, there's slightly different philosophies, I guess, in where we're placing value here.
Yeah, definitely. That's like a huge reason why I like him. It's just the archetype that he fills and what he could be potentially. And if you get him on the right type of developmental path, I feel like he could be a very effective player in multitude of roles.
And this, if you're talking about the Hornets specifically, like, he's not a guy who'll probably be in contention for the first pick, but if he was to be late in the draft. But they don't have a stretch five at the moment. And it would be nice to have that option to go for the best. Oh, actually, they added Grant Williams. I forgot about that. They do have a stretch five. They do have a stretch five.
Stretch four. I just said. Definitely a stretch four.
he showed me enough that he can be an option there. Let's move on to our next five. My next five are Devin Carter at 16, so just a little bit lower than you. Baylor Shireman at 17, Tijan Salon at 18, Kevin McCullough at 19, and as the aforementioned, Tyler Smith at 20. Chase, you're 15 to 20.
So I start here with, I think when I heard this last time I watched film, the French broadcaster said, Tijan Salon is number 16, lovely. I think is the exact pronunciation of his name.
Très bien.
Tijan Salon is probably how the Americans are going to say that one. Number 17. yeah, right. Any English speaker, I should say.
Yeah.
Daron Holmes is my number 17. Number 18, I have Khalil Ware. Nice run on bigs here, 16, 17, 18. 19 is the Australian freshman out of Kansas, Johnny Furphy. Number 20, we're going back to bigs with Yves Missi from Baylor.
Okay. I'm going to jump right in because I know you're a big Daron Holmes guy. I know you were last year in the draft.
I'm ready.
I jumped back into the film. He's been one I was saving until kind of later on in the year. I just don't see it. I don't see how any of it will translate to the NBA. I think he is super skinny, very narrow. I don't think he has the size really needed for center. And he's an interior player. Like, everything is just him basically posting up, trying to get passes caught in the post, which he does well. Like, despite being skinny and narrow, he actually fights the position pretty well. But he lacks strength. He is just so slow and awkward defensively. And I just don't have to see how he will survive in the NBA on the perimeter as a power forward or as a center on the interior. Like, just some of the defensive film, I thought was like he was just waiting for his team to get the ball back. I know he blocks the ball quite a lot. It just doesn't impress me from the defensive film I've seen. So I understand, like, sometimes you just look at someone with that level of production over multiple years in college and go, they've got something. They just have to find a way to be productive. And I think that's fair. Like, we've seen that from, like, Luka Garza, who was caught on in Minnesota and graduated from his two-way contract. He's just a guy who found a way to kind of change his game and be effective. And maybe Daron Holmes can do that. Even if it is, I just don't see it. So he's probably going to be in the second round for me.
So I think I disagree with everything that you maybe just said. Like, I think the main thing is, like, I basically have the same feeling about him as you do about Kyle Filipowski. Like, I see a big man that can do, like, a little bit of everything on top of being really good in, like, some specific areas that are very impactful for big men to be good at. Like, he averaged, like, 28-3-2 this year, took a huge jump as a shooter, is, like, a legitimate pick-and-pop threat on relatively high volume this year. He has great footwork and shot prep, like, coming out of those screens. Like, he steps up, sets hard screens, flips his hips, like, makes pretty good strides, like, going backwards to create space on those pick-and-pop attempts. And obviously being like 6'11", I think is probably what he'll come in at in shoes at the combine. He can shoot over pretty much anybody. It's a relatively quick release. Like, obviously big dudes tend to not have like pristine mechanics, and he definitely doesn't. It's like somewhat slow and a bit like clunky. He leans back a little bit into it too. But he's just shot. He like adding that layer of versatility as a junior too, I think, says a lot. Like, he was already one of the best bigs in the country, and he's only really gotten better after that as well. And on top of that, he runs the floor. Like, he gets up and down. As soon as a ball comes off the rim and it's clear that he's not getting the rebound and his team is in possession, he's booking it, like sprinting to the other end of the floor, not necessarily even like looking for the ball, just making sure that he gets down and brings somebody with him, so that his team can get some sort of advantage there. He's mobile enough to switch a bit as well, I think, and you see that in the open court as well as in the half court. He plays really hard defensively. Like you said, he is a productive shot blocker, but like to me, it does look good to me. So he has a drop defender profile. He can erase mistakes for guys. He can rotate. He can cover up for he maybe can cover like fours, fives. Maybe he can switch a little bit onto threes, I think. I've just always liked him. The style that he plays, like, I don't see why he can't become like a Nick Claxton type with like a pick and pop threat, and obviously not like a defensive player of the year caliber type guy like Nick Claxton maybe can be, but a very similar play style with a slightly lower ceiling and like a little bit of a different layer to his game with the shooting. I feel like spot starter, like backup caliber bigs are worth a top 20 pick in this class, and there's Daron Holmes at number 17 for me. So
we're going to disagree. I think it's one where the NBA obviously didn't give him great feedback, and that's probably why he went back to school, right? So there must be elements there. Now, if they just said you need to go back to school and prove that you can shoot, I think he did a pretty good job to at least give people the idea that, oh, he might be able to. But my gut tells me that there's more than just that being the thing. Okay, let's move on to our last grouping here. Our players ranked 21 to 30. Chase, give us your 21 to 25.
21, the aforementioned Kyle Filipowski. Number 22, Bub Carrington. Best name in the draft class, by the way. Number 23, Dylan Jones out of Weber State. Ever heard of it? Last time somebody came out of Weber State, they ended up being a pretty damn good basketball player. Number 24, Baylor Shireman, the also aforementioned. I feel like we might be the premier Baylor Shireman podcast in this draft cycle.
Absolutely. Apparently so.
Yeah. And number 25, I am probably the premier Xavien Lee draft enthusiast. And I'm going to have the sophomore Princeton guard rounding out my top 25 here.
Yeah.
Maybe probably saying that name for the first time for many of the people listening to this podcast. So,
21-25 for me, Tristan Da Silva of Colorado, mentioned him earlier. AJ Mitchell, Johnny Furphy. AJ Mitchell, by the way, Belgian guard. Very American sounding name, but he's actually Belgian. Johnny Furphy from 23, who you've already mentioned. Yves Missi and Antonio Reeves, who a lot of people probably watched playing in Kentucky this year. Kind of large size, two guard senior. And I don't want to spend quite as much time on this page, so I'm just actually going to go through here and give my 25 to 32. You can do the same, and we'll pick maybe one guy to kind of talk about here. So 26, I have Kal-El Ware. 27, Bobby Klintman, formerly of Wake Forest and played in the NBL on the Rising Stars program this year's. 28, Zach Edey. I'm pretty sure you'll all have heard of him. 29, Ryan Dunn. And 30, Miami's Kyshawn George. Chase, you want to round out your last five as well?
Number 26, I have Hunter Salas. 27, I have Tristan Da Silva, just a little bit lower than where you've got him. Number 28, I have Ryan Dunn, a little bit higher than where you've got him. 29, I have Oso Iguodaro. Number 30, I have Portsmouth Invitational Tournament standout Isaiah Crawford.
Okay. Chase, let's just go one guy, and I'm going to let you, as a co-host, that you can pick who we want to talk about.
Yeah, I already said it here. I am going to be the Xavien Lee guy this draft process. He is, by all means, an unheralded prospect out of Princeton, played in the Ivy League, 20 years old, was a reserve last year when the Tigers made that Sweet 16 run. I believe they beat Arizona in the first round. And they went 24-5 this year with Lee as the best player, 17-6-4, started every game, all Ivy League team. He's super shifty ball handler and deep range shooter, while being like a true point guard that is like good assist to turnover ratio, sets the table for his teammates, creates looks for himself, really, really good finisher at the rim. Like, despite playing in the Ivy League and being skinny, he is more than an NBA athlete. I think he's going to be able to create shots with his first step, using his burst to get by players. Very accurate playmaker going downhill as well, can run pick and roll, really good at like falling into place, playing off ball, and then shifting into place as a creator. I think the playing in the Princeton offense probably taught him that. Just all around, like a really, really good offensive player. And I think the defense is going to be pretty good once he becomes a little bit stronger as well, because he shows a lot of energy at the point of attack. So I am a big Xavien Lee fan. I think he has a very good shot at being a backup point guard in the NBA. And the mid-20s is, I think, where backup point guards can thrive in the draft. Like, that's where you get your value from. If you draft somebody like Peyton Pritchard or something at 27, that's like a home run, I think, if you can get a long-term NBA player out of that. And I think Lee has a good chance to be that guy. So got him at number 25. Who do you want to talk about here, James?
I need to go back and watch some Xavien Lee film.
He's it's awesome. Not a guy, he's so fun.
It is not a guy who always really kind of been in my radar. Has he got an invite to the G League Combine, I'm guessing?
Yep. Yes. He will be a G League Elite Camp invite. There are a lot of like really good players that are going to be at the
Could
Elite
he,
Camp.
He might go back to school, Xavien Lee? Is that possible?
I believe he has foregone the rest of his college eligibility. I think he's in this draft. So
he's in. All right. That's interesting for someone who's got years of eligibility left and is not even got a Chicago invite to be in. Mm-hmm. But interesting. I'm going to go Antonio Reeves. Probably late second round pick on a lot of boards. Look, a lot of people have seen him play. Went to small school, transferred to Kentucky. Really good size, strong frame for a two. Again, is another like off-ball threat. but like does well enough to kind of like also dribble in traffic and get to spots. Really great shooter. Super deep range. I just think there's a lot of kind of like almost like Max Strus element to him. That's the second Max Strus shout out we've got in today's game, who is another senior who came out and kind of ended up finding his way. But he just has some moves that I see, like, you know, a little kind of fake, go to a spin and floater, just moves that he's played against NBA level competition at Kentucky. He's played well. He was like, you know, Cal was basically starting him, choosing to start him ahead of some of the Dillingham, Reed Shepherd. I think he's better on the defensive side of the ball, which is the reason for that. He has the good size. So I'm just a big Antonio Reeves guy. I think he's been trusted by a guy in Cal who is kind of like known for producing NBA prospects. Like, you can question his college coaching, but he's developed guys. So I'm going Antonio Reeves, first round talent, late bloomer. He's definitely older. He's 23, 24. But there's a lot there. I don't see what won't work at the NBA. I don't see what doesn't translate. So,
yeah, I mean, he's definitely got an NBA offensive game. The only thing that like scares me a little bit with him is he's very like unproductive as a steals and blocks and rebounds guy. But I mean, he has more than enough like tape on film, both from Illinois State, where he was like a electric scorer, and then he scaled that upwards to Kentucky and got even better against significantly better competition as he got older. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's hard to keep him out of the 25 to like 45 range, at least like being a draftable guy at very least, with how productive he's been over the last couple of years on a good team nonetheless.
I think both Lee and Reeves will be guys probably available when the Charlotte Hornets pick in the second round in the early 40s.
Absolutely.
With that Houston Rockets pick. So could be names to look out for. Probably two-way candidates, I would say, both of those guys, like in the eyes of the NBA, maybe rather than us, as we ranked in the first round. But Chase, this has been Big Board Wars. It's been fun to debate our Filipowskis, our Dillinghams, and everyone else, and to reveal our big boards, which we'll be posting out. So thanks for joining me, and I'll speak to you next week for our mock draft after the draft lottery.
See you guys.